Okay, everyone, good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, January 30th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly lunch and learn, and everyone's invited to take one of these. And let's get started. Okay, so we are in Parshat Mishpatim this week, and this section that we're going to talk about describes what happened at Har Sinai, and the famous statement of Bnei Yisrael of Na'aseh V'Nishma, which can be translated in different ways. We will do and we will hear, we will do and we will understand, we will do and we will listen. But before they said Na'aseh V'Nishma, they also said something else. So let's look at the psukim and then try to understand, and we'll note the question. So this is Perek Chaf Dalet, chapter 24 in the book of Shemot. And we start with source number one, starting with verse 3, Pasuk Gimel. Vayavo Moshe v'yisaper la'am et kol divrei Hashem v'et kol ha'mishpatim, v'yan kol la'am kol echad v'yomru kol ha'divarim asher diber Hashem na'aseh. And Moshe came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the ordinances, and all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord hath spoken will we do. V'yichtov Moshe et kol divrei Hashem v'yashkem b'boker v'yiven mizbeach tachat ahar. So Moshe wrote this all down, got up in the morning, he built an altar, 12 pillars. And he sent the young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings, etc. Vayikach Moshe chatzi hadam, Vayasem ba'aganot v'chatzi hadam zarak al mizbeach. Moshe took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he dashed against the altar. And then we get to pasuk 7, which is the other key verse here. Vayikach sefer habrit vayikra baznei ha'am vayomru kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh v'nishma. And he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people, and they said, "All that the Lord hath spoken, we will do and understand." Or, well, for our purposes, the question is, what does Na'aseh V'Nishma mean? But our first question, the main question is, in Pasuk Gimel, in verse 3, the people said, Na'aseh, we will do. And then in Pasuk 7, they add something. They say, Na'aseh V'Nishma, we will do and we will. I don't think it means obey, because Na'aseh means obey. What's the difference?
Okay, there is a
difference. What is it?
When you go and do it automatically, you're really not obliged to think about it.
Mm-hmm. And
when you obey,
okay.
You think about it.
Ah, okay, excellent. That's exactly the answer to the question that the Shemi Shmuel gives, and he's the person we're going to be discussing today. He was born in 1855 and died in 1926. He was the second Rebbe of the Sachachover Hasidic dynasty. He's known as the Shemi Shmuel because that's the title of a 9-volume work on Torah that he wrote, and he is trying to understand, what's the difference between Na'aseh and Na'aseh V'Nishma? And even if you're right that obey means to understand, what happened? What changed between Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Zayin that all of a sudden, at the beginning they said Na'aseh, we will do, and now all of a sudden they're going to say we're going to do and understand? What changed? Yeah.
Well, he read it to them. Before, he didn't read it to them.
He did.
No, at the beginning he says, all the words we will do.
No, Vayasaper.
He told them, but he didn't read it to them.
What's the difference?
The difference is that now it's, well, it's one thing when you say to me, this is the rules on the road, but if you see it in a rule book from the police, it's a different rule.
So then why they say na'aseh? Meaning
they said they will do what he told them.
Right.
But now they understand from his reading what it really is.
What changed though? What changed? Yeah, but what changed between the reading, between the telling?
No, he tells. What he's not reading. He was telling them.
Yeah. So what? But, right. So why would someone say? Why would someone have one reaction to one type of declaration of the law and another reaction to a different type of declaration? He's telling them the same thing, presumably.
But he's telling them in his own words and not in God's words.
Okay, so what changed, though? Was there some greater understanding given?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Somebody's telling somebody something that he heard from somebody, he does not tell it. It's Guf Shlishi. He doesn't tell it in direct talk.
This is all Guf Shlishi. In the first time, it says, "Vayisaper la'am et kol divrei Hashem."
No. And in Pasuk Zayin, it says, "Vayikra."
And he read.
Yeah, that's divrei Hashem, though. It's not God's not doing it. It's all Moshe. It's all Moshe telling them what God said.
No, Barry, it's like
hold on.
Yeah, but in when I'm reading from here, the Divrei Elokim Chaim, this is the actual text, and I'm not allowed to change anything, and I cannot change anything. But if I'm telling what, you know, Barbara told me that last night she went to a convention, and the speaker was. So you change when you're telling something that somebody tells you. It's not a direct talk.
I'm not so sure about that because we're not talking about someone telling you about what happened in a play. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu telling Bnei Yisrael what God said.
Maybe he forgot something. Maybe it's not me.
He's a human being.
Maybe it's not.
Okay, so let's say that you're right. So then, what's the difference between Naaseh and Naaseh v'Nishma? What changed? What is in your opinion, then, Chana? What does the Nishma add in Pasuk Zayin? What does the Nishma add?
It became clearer when
yeah,
they read it.
Pasuk Zayin, it's much more.
Naaseh v'Nishma. We will do and what? We will do and we will what?
And we will hear what we will understand what.
So that's what I'm saying. What if you're right that the first time was Moshe telling?
We are willing to do everything that you are telling us. Now tell us what.
Maybe. But the second time,
in both times they said Naaseh. Both times they say we're going to do exactly what you tell us.
Yeah,
so there's no so one second. So just understand. Let's understand clearly that even if you are all seem to be saying that the second time around it was more authentic. Because it was word for word. But it does not change their agreement to obey. The first time around, when according to you, it was hearsay, maybe it wasn't perfect, they are still willing, 100% we're going to do it. And the second time, 100% we're going to do it. So what does Nishma add? What does it add?
Maybe what he was reading had some explanation in it. It said he was...
It came with commentary.
When you see it in black and white, or however, in stone and carving, it's just much more. What's the word? Decisive.
But what? So I'm asking, what does v'nishma add?
But they add
Naaseh, we will do. Both times. What does we can't?
You know what?
What does v'nishma add? What does it mean?
You know,
what does it mean?
You have a conversation with somebody, and they tell you, and you say, "You're right." But then when you read it, you say, "Ah, that's what he meant."
But they said that they both times they said we're going to do it. So what type of new understanding did they get the second time around? Moshe was just reading them the words. What
maybe
does the Nishma add?
Sefer Abrit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there is a kind of covenant.
The Torah is Sefer Habrit.
I know, but in Pasuk Gimel. It doesn't say Vaikach Sefer Brit. Kind of, this is more Brit Ben Betarim. Like it's like much more.
So great. So what does Vinishma? What does Vinishma add? What changed for them? Something changed for Bnei Yisrael. Zach.
Here it's Sefer Brit.
What changed for them?
We have to look activities that were happening between first time accepting and second time.
Okay.
Activity which became absolutely important through all our history, Korbanot. The Korbanot is such essential part of Avodah. That
we, right.
And all people were involved in it. It means that, as Nitza mentioned before, passive and active, and I think that activities on those second time were dictated that Klal Israel selected people who were involved in the
right.
Korbanot. It's almost like setting up, it's not just a law, which is, we can debate who could read, who could not read, but Korbanot is a part of our doing to the same thing like we have.
So then I ask the same question to you. What changed? What does Vinishma mean? And how does doing the Korbanot lead them to say that's something extra? What does it mean? And what does that have to do with Korbanot?
One second.
I'm asking. It's interesting. It's a very interesting point you're making that they were active. Okay, so that changed what they answered. What's the connection between being active and saying Vinishma? What does Vinishma mean according to that interpretation?
In first time, it's a passive admission. A second time, it's an active understanding.
So Vinishma is an Na'aseh, means the same thing both times. The same word, we have to assume, means the same thing both times. So Vinishma is some sort of better understanding. How does bringing Korbanot bring them a better understanding of the laws of Sukkos?
We understand why we're doing it?
How? If it's about Korbanot,
I don't know, I'm just asking.
Right, so if it's about Korbanot, how does that happen? So I like what you're saying, but we still have to clarify how activity in one area would bring clarity in another area. Okay, so we have a couple of options on the table. One is there's a difference between how someone understands something when it's told to them versus when it's read to them. It's unclear to me, at least, it's unclear to me according to that interpretation what Vinishma means. And we have this idea that active involvement in the Korbanot brought B'nai Yisrael some greater understanding of the Torah. Okay, great. Let's see a third option of the Shem Mishmuel, who understands the difference between Naseh V'Nishma. First of all, his understanding of V'Nishma is understanding the reason for the mitzvot. Not just we're going to do it, but we're going to understand why we do it. And the question is then, the next question he has to answer is, why the first time around did they say, we're just going to do it? And the second time around, they say, we're going to understand why we do it. Okay, what changed? Okay, that's the Shem Yishuel's question. Why the change from Naseh to Naseh V'Nishma? First, we have to define V'Nishma, which means, according to him, an understanding of the reason for the mitzvot and why the change. So let's read the Shem Yishuel. Okay, it's page one. Source number two. Hine yisod kol ha-mitzvot v'reishitan l'kabel alav ol malchut shamayim v'haynu l'asot k'chol asher nitztaveh b'li shum hitchachmot v'yidiat hatam k'mo eved ha-oset tzavat rabo. Right? The most basic and the foundation of the mitzvot is to do the mitzvot because God told us to do them, to accept the yoke of heaven without any particular understanding of the reason. Just like a servant does the will of the master. V'achatu lo im hadavar nireh be'enav shetov v'nachon lasot kein, o lehefach. And it's the same thing. Your desire to do the mitzvot is the same whether or not you think it's going to bring you some positive good or not. Achatu, it's the same thing. We do the mitzvot because they're God's will. Mikom akom hu adaita derabye ka'avid. Nonetheless, he's working in accordance with the desire of the master. וכן צריך להיות בעשיית המצוות שאפילו שכלו יגיד לו שאין הדבר נכון, ושלא יצמח לו מזה רק רע חס ושלום. Then he even says something more interesting, that the same approach should be when we do the mitzvot, that even if our intellect tells us that not only is nothing good going to come out of this, but something bad could come out of this, mikol makom osin ha-mitzvot machmat tzavat Hashem itbarach. Nonetheless, we do the mitzvot because God said so. V'yachati im navin hatam, ve'ech se mevi le'osher amiti, o chas v'shalom afil nireh b'enei hadam lehefach. And again, it's the same thing, whether we understand the reason, and it's going to bring us some sort of benefit, positive benefit, or lehefach, the opposite. Mikol makom osin machmat tzivui Hashem itbarach. Nonetheless, we do the mitzvot because God told us to do the mitzvot. V'zehu, hold on 1 second. V'zehu, hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to make sure this is still recording. Yeah. V'zehu machamat habitul ha'amiti sheYisrael b'teilin l'Hashem itbarach she'ein lehem b'chinat atzmam klal. This is a very Hasidic notion. Bitul hayesh, it's like almost like a self denial, right? That me vis-a-vis God, I'm nothing, and God's everything. And so God says to do something, I do it. The Kamosha Mar David Hamelech Nafshi Kigmol Alai Imo. Okay, great. So that's the first point he makes is the reason we do the mitzvot is because God said so. Whether we understand why, whether we don't understand why, even if it's going to be a positive experience for us, or even chas v'shalom, as he says, a negative one, we do the mitzvot. Okay?
Midrashic, the point about mound as opposed to
drabah. Right, exactly.
All that discussed, would it well,
no problem.
It,
sure,
right,
no problem.
Exactly. He continues, paragraph number 3. V'ish asher eile lo mutar lo lehistakel hasig tama mitzvot ki afilu im chas v'sholom haseichel yate oto lachshov she'ein ze nachon lo yate mini haderech basher yodei heitev shebemet zehu haderech hanachon. But someone who is already developed and has already sort of cemented themselves as someone who is totally committed to God, that person could start seeking out the answers or the reasons why, because even if they find even if they are unsatisfied with the reason, they're still so committed that they're not going to let the presence or the right. They're not going to let that doubt stop them from serving God. Right? Let's say you think you figured out the reason for the mitzvah. The reason for the mitzvah no longer applies. So you say, okay, I'm not going to do the mitzvah anymore. We're not worried about that if the person is a committed, right, cemented, strong, absolute Eved Hashem, servant of God. What would such a person do? They're going to say, I must not get it. Meaning, I thought the reason for not eating pork was because it has, what's that disease?
Trichinosis.
I can now eat pork without getting trichinosis, so I'm going to go have some bacon. No, I must not understand. There must be some other reason why God said not to eat pork. And so even though what I thought was the reason is proven to be false, I'm still solid in my service of Hashem. Doesn't bother me.
Is that telling you shouldn't really be learning or researching?
So that's what he's saying. So if you are a person who is, like we said, cemented, and they're strong in their service of God, then you could go and you could look for reasons for the mitzvot. Okay? Aval ish einenu kol kach davak. If someone who's not so connected, like devek, like glues, connected, stuck to God, yoter tov lo shelo yeda shum tam v'yaseh hakol b'tmimut gemura. That person should just stay, keep it simple, right? Keep it simple. Right, you should not just not seek out the reasons why. You have to seek out how to do the mitzvot, but you don't want to get too fancy because it may harm your emunah, may harm your faith. Ki be'im yeda tamo shel davar pen yita'ehu haseichel. Maybe you're going to be, as the saying goes, too smart for your own good. So he's setting up two different types of personalities. On the one hand, the most basic personality type should just serve God because that's the reason why we serve God, and whether or not we understand the reason, and even if we think the reason is not good, even if it's going to bring some negative. But if one is already, you know, very clear and strong and has a in their service of God, and they're not going to let a negative philosophical experience impact their practical living as a Jew, then such a person could do it. With that information, now he's going to explain the difference between Naaseh v'Nishma, and why the first time around it was only Naaseh, and the second time around it was Naaseh v'Nishma. We needed this background to get to the answer. Paragraph 4. V'al kein tekef. Kisheshamo Yisrael mimatan Torah hayu yireim lenafsham lomar nishma. The first time they heard, which is represented in pasuk gimel, they were afraid to say nishma, which is means we're going to go and seek out the reasons. Pen v'ulai im yishmu hatamim ulai yagid lehem sichlam shenenu ken. If they maybe they wouldn't like the reasons that they found out, and therefore they weren't going to accept it. Upen chas v'shalom yinatu af k'tzat miderech hayashar or afilu yitkararu me'at l'chein emru stam na'aseh. The first time the Jewish people heard the Torah, they said one thing. Your God, we're going to do bitul hayesh, we're going to do the nullification of ourself, and we're going to accept the mitzvot na'aseh. Period. With no chachmos. With no, nothing too fancy. Na'aseh. Period. V'lo ratzu le'da shum tam. And they weren't interested in knowing the reason. They exercised this sort of self-restraint because they were insecure in their own spiritual strength. It's very interesting, right? It's a very, I think, interesting idea for us to think about, right? What is our spiritual strength and how secure are we in it? And if we're not, what do we do to strengthen it? Or what do we do to avoid situations where it may be challenged, right? I think it's very hard to do that. I think the Shemi Shmuel writing in the early 1900s may be different than it is today, although it's not so long ago, to sort of just go through life with this simple, strong faith without understanding the reasons. They didn't want to. This is the most powerful part. V'lo ratzu le'da shum tam b'davar. Ach, what about? So where does Naaseh v'Nishma come from, right? If the Jews only wanted to say we're going to do the mitzvot, and we don't want to know the reasons why because we're nervous that spiritually we are not yet strong enough or ready. Ach, achar kach, kisheshamu shamar lehem Moshe Rabbeinu Lev Hashalom. Hare atem kshurim tefusiyim va'anuvim im kain shuv lo hayalahem lachshosh pen yinatu chas v'shalom miderech hayashar. But once Moshe said to them, right, he did the, maybe this is the karbanot, he's saying that you're it, you're in, right, you've made it, your faith is strong. Once they hear that, then they're no longer afraid that they are going to veer from the proper path. They now understand that they are well connected to God's will. And even if their intellect is going to tell them, oh no, this doesn't make sense anymore, they're going to say, oh no, my intellect is wrong. God is right. We must just simply not understand what God means. So it doesn't make a difference. We're going to listen. That's when they said nishma, naaseh v'nishma, meaning we're going to do, and now we're going to also gain some understanding because we're no longer afraid that this extra understanding is going to send us in the wrong direction. Okay, So that is this middle part, by the way, Harayatem Kshurim. That's a midrash where Moshe says to them, "You are connected to God." So in this interpretation, the Shem Yishmuel explains why the first time was just Naaseh. Well, first he explains what Vinishma means. Nishma means this deeper understanding of the reasons for the mitzvot. So now he explains, the first time it said Naaseh was because they didn't want to do any of that. They wanted to just be simple and straightforward because they didn't trust themselves. But once they developed some sort of spiritual self-confidence, then Nishma, then we could do a little bit more. And that's why they changed it. It could be. There must be the Olot Uzvachim. There must be something about that. Right, so it must have been some. It must have been that symbolic, yeah, symbolic that they were understanding, that they were right, exactly. Rabbi Soloveitchik, just to conclude, has a beautiful essay on this notion of the reasons for mitzvot, and he takes a little bit of a twist. So on page 5. He says there are 3 types of questions that we could ask about any phenomenon. On the left side of page 5, there are 3 types of questions we ask about any phenomenon. Why probes motivations. Page 5. Keep going, Chana. Chamesh. Okay, left side. There are 3 types of questions we may ask about any phenomenon. Why probes motivations to establish why things are the way they are. How seeks explanations as to how they function effectively, and what looks for interpretations to establish meaningfulness. Why and how pertain to qualities such which presumably are inherent in things. What deals with subjective formulations which are superimposed by the beholder for purposes of utility and convenience. So let's go on. So when he talks about the 3 questions, on how do these 3 questions apply to mitzvot? So number 1 on the right side, asking why for mitzvot. Applying each of the above 3 questions regarding God and his mitzvot, one meets with 3 differing results. Asking why God issued certain commandments is seeking to comprehend the unfathomable. It is more than simply a matter of being unable to comprehend God's mind and motivation. It is more profound than that. When we ask why in the human context, we are truly asking what motivated him. A correct reply would be that in order to achieve objective B, agent A had to be employed because otherwise B would remain inaccessible. Obviously, one cannot reason in this matter about God as though he had to overcome some inability or deficiency by using an intermediary agent. Meaning when you ask why someone did something, you're saying what good was in it for them. You can't ask that about God because if God is not lacking anything, he doesn't gain anything by giving them its vote. So the why is not a good question to ask about mitzvot because, first of all, we'll never understand God's mind. And second, it represents a misunderstanding of true godliness. So in response to the question of why did God create the world, we should not say that he is kind and wanted to bestow goodness on the world or that a king needs a kingdom. The very notion of need implies that he had an insufficiency which he sought to overcome. And in traditional understanding of God, right, that is obviously untenable, as he writes. So we don't ask the question of why. What about the question of what? Let's keep going, turn the page. Asking what for mitzvot is on the bottom left. I'm sorry, how? Asking how for chukim is also nonsensical. How does the sprinkling of the watery ashes of the para aduma cleanse the ritually unclean? Meaning, if I ask how does a car engine work, someone could sit me down at the table, we could open up a book, we could look at a diagram, and we could say, first this happens, which causes this to happen, which causes this to happen. There are steps, right? But how do you answer the question, how does the mikvah purify me? There's no mechanical step it just does. Why? Because God says it does. But how does it work? I don't know, doesn't, right, doesn't, It doesn't, the question doesn't make sense. How does the goat sent to Azazel bring forgiveness Yom Kippur? How does Chalitza release a widow for remarriage? We willingly and reverently accept the incomprehensible how, even as we dutifully embrace the unfathomable why. In contrast, asking why and how from Mishpatim does seem to be legitimate and promising. We think we know the motivations for prohibitions against stealing, murder, adultery, and false testimony, and for the positive commandments, which reflect the sensitivity to the rights and welfare of others. They seem morally uplifting and socially stabilizing. In fact, however, their moral reasonableness is often in question in our modern world. Even the things that we think are obvious. Why should we not steal? We think we know that's very clear, but it's not clear to everybody. Why should you not kill wasn't clear to the Nazis, right? So even in areas which we think are clear, the how and the why don't always work. However, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, there's another type of question, which is what? And that's on the right side of page 6. Remaining is the third question, what, which inquires about the meaningfulness of particular mitzvot to the individual and to society. It's a difference, it's a nuanced difference between saying, why did God give the mitzvah, which Rabbi Soloveitchik says is impossible to really understand, versus what meaning does it bring to me or to my society? That's a different question. Because one is getting in God's head, which doesn't work. The other is getting in my own head, which that does work. This is a legitimate pursuit. Nay, it may even be meritorious to inquire. How can I integrate and assimilate this mitzvah into my religious consciousness and outlook? What thoughts and emotions should I feel when the Parah Aduma chapter is read in the synagogue? How can it help me achieve dveikut? Remember, the same word that the Sukkachever used, stickiness to God, right? To a greater closeness to God. Such questions reflect the need to be intellectually and emotionally engaged in the performance of a mitzvah, even of chukim. One does not ask, why did God legislate Parah Aduma, or how does it purify the ritually defiled, but what is its spiritual message to me? Or how can I, as a thinking and feeling person, assimilate it into my world outlook? When we say the Shema, we experience the acceptance of the divine sovereignty, but what should we feel when we scrupulously avoid admixtures of meat and dairy? This is what Rav Moshe HaDarshan, cited by Rashi, attempted to do, to suggest an interpretation which would heighten the meaningfulness of Parah Aduma. Rav Soloveitchik wants to walk a very fine line between saying this is what God meant, which is, in his view, a meaningless question, impossible, as opposed to what does it mean for me? So, I don't want to leave, though, with the impression that there are no reasons for the mitzvot, right? Because that also would lead us to think, that also is difficult for some people to accept, and also would lead some people to think that the mitzvot are just like busy work. It's like right on the board 1,000 times, I will not talk in class. I will not, right? That just keeps the kid out of further trouble, but doesn't change anything, right? So I wanted to show you a really important source back on page 3 about how the Rambam felt about reasons for mitzvot. There is a group of human beings who consider it a grievous thing that causes should be given for any law. What would please them most is that the intellect would not find the meaning for the commandments and prohibitions. So I'm not sure if he's talking about Rabbi Soloveitchik language here, right? Meaning personal meaning or God's meaning. What compels them to feel thus is a sickness that they find in their souls, a sickness to which they are unable to give utterance and of which they cannot furnish a satisfactory account. For they think that if those laws were useful in this existence and had been given to us for this or for that reason, it would be as if they derived from the reflection and understanding of some intelligent being. If, however, there is a thing for which the intellect could not find any meaning at all, and that does not lead to something useful, it undoubtedly derives from God, for the reflection of man would not lead to such a thing. So the Rambam is saying this is backwards. I see a human being doing something, and I can understand why, so that must be a human being. But when God gives something, it has to be incomprehensible in order for it to really be from God. Meaning God has to make no sense. Right? If, however, there was a thing for which the intellect could not find any meaning at all, meaning when things make no sense, we should attribute it to God. When things make sense, we can attribute it to human beings. So the Rambam is saying that's a diminishment of God. Right? It's the other way around. God is perfect. So what God does makes sense. People do stupid things. People do things that don't make sense. Let's continue reading. Do not find any meaning at all that does not lead to something useful. It is undoubtedly derived from God, for the reflection of man would not lead to such a thing. It is as if, according to these people of weak intellects, man were more perfect than his maker. For man speaks and acts in a manner that leads to some intended end, whereas the deity does not act thus, but commands us to do things that are not useful to us and forbids us to do things that are not harmful to us. But he is far exalted above this, right? So, like I said before, it turns God into something silly, that God just gave us things that make no reason, for nothing at all. But man is elevated to being perfect. The contrary is the case. On the basis of its dictum, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day, and it says, which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this community is a wise and understanding people. Thus it states explicitly that even all the statutes which show to all the nations that they have been given with wisdom and understanding. Now, if there is a thing for which no reason is known, and that does not either procure something useful or ward off something harmful, why should one say of one who believes in it or practices it that he is wise and understanding of great worth? Right? The Torah promises us that the nations of the world are going to look at us and see us doing all the mitzvot and say, look how smart they are, that they're doing all these things. Right? But if we're doing things which are meaningless, why that promise in the Torah would not come true. Right? So there must be meaning. And why should the religious communities think it and wonder? Rather, things are indubitably as we have mentioned. Every commandment from among these 613 commandments exists either, this is a very important Rambam, the Rambam is telling us that every single mitzvah could fall into one of these categories. Every single one can accomplish one or more of the following things: with a view to communicating a correct opinion, or to putting an end to an unhealthy opinion, to communicating a rule of justice, or to warding off injustice, or to endowing men with noble moral quality, or to warning them against an evil moral quality. There are six things, the Rambam says, every single mitzvah must fall into one of these categories. So I think the Rambam is saying something a little more than Rabbi Soloveitchik was willing to say, because the Rambam seems to be saying this is the reason why these mitzvot were given. God wanted to do one of these six things with each mitzvah. And Rabbi Soloveitchik said, maybe we can't go that far because we really don't understand what God wanted, and to say that God needed to do something also becomes theologically problematic. I think you could read the Rambam, you know, both ways. But what he's angry about, the Rambam, or what he's trying to fight about in this little snippet that I gave you, is this notion that God gives us things to do which make no sense. And if you really want to know if something's from God, find something that is meaningless, right? Find something that makes no sense, then you know it's from God. If it's rational, it must come from a human being. The Rambam says that you have then diminished God and elevated human beings, so it must be that God's mitzvot have a purpose, and it must be one of these six purposes. There's a huge debate in the literature about whether or not we should seek out reasons for mitzvot. The Rabbi Soloveitchik has his view, his nuanced view. The Rambam here has a view. Others say we shouldn't. And the Shemi Shmuel says, well, it depends. If you're, if you have very strong faith and you trust yourself,
no.
Look, but until that point, right, it's better. By the way, and this is the way we educate children. In the early years of education, we just tell them, do this, do this, do this, and we get them used to it. And then later, as they grow up and their intellect develops, and hopefully they're more strong in their religious identity, then we open up some more of these more complex philosophical questions. And so the really what the Shemi Shmuel is saying, right when the Jewish people got the Torah, they were like children. And they weren't ready for something more. But then Moshe comforted them and gave them a sense of confidence in themselves. And therefore, they were able to ask that further question. Hence the change from Naaseh to Naaseh v'Nishma.
Men have